Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Record, formerly the Paxton Record, for Thursday, December 7th, 2017. We'll begin our reading today with an article entitled, Dow AgroSciences to Close Gibson City Research Station. Gibson City. Dow AgroSciences, LLC, plans to close its research station south of Gibson City by year's end, a company official said Thursday. The facility, located at 454 East Ford County Road, 300 North, was acquired by Dow AgroSciences, a subsidiary of the Dow Chemical Company, from Dairyland Seed Company in 2008. In a statement provided to the Ford County Record, Dow AgroSciences spokesman Greg Schmidt said the decision to close the facility was made to help drive sustainable growth over the long term. Creating a strong, independent agriculture company requires that we integrate our operations and establish a streamlined, efficient organization aligned with our strategic objectives, Schmidt said. As part of this, we must establish an integrated, industry-leading research and development organization with combined assets and capabilities optimized to deliver the innovative solutions our customers need. Through the integration process, our goal is to establish the strongest foundation possible for the intended agriculture company to drive sustainable growth over the long term. This includes addressing duplicative sites and facilities and relocating certain capabilities. It has been determined that we will close and relocate the capabilities at the Gibson City site to our research center in Champaign. Schmidt said the closure will happen by December 31st, with work at the Gibson City site transitioning by that time to the company's facility at the University of Illinois Research Park in Champaign. What will happen with the Gibson City property was not yet known. We will evaluate options to determine how best to utilize the Gibson City location, Schmidt said. In 2015, Dow AgroSciences opened a facility at the UI's Research Park. Projects at that facility focus on exploration and implementation of analytics technology applied to agricultural challenges. The facility allows students, most of them at the graduate level, to work year-round on various projects related to the development of advanced computational tools and analysis of chemical and biological data sets. The Dow AgroSciences facility in Champaign is shared by the Dow Chemical Company Innovation Center, which opened in 2013 and focuses on information technology applied to research and development. Dow AgroSciences began in the 1950s as the agricultural unit of the Dow Chemical Company. From the beginning, we have set out to discover and develop innovative solutions that improve the way the world farms, the company's website says. Dow AgroSciences employs more than 9,000 people worldwide, and its 2016 global sales totaled $6.2 billion. Turning to Watseka, drug bust in rural Watseka results in four arrests. Four people were arrested Wednesday on drug charges after police found about 1,200 grams of cannabis, 129 grams of psilocybin mushrooms, numerous vials of liquid THC, and numerous items of drug paraphernalia, along with $1,100 in cash, during a search of a rural Watseka home. The arrests were made after the Watseka enforcement team, with cooperation from the Iroquois County Sheriff's Department, the Kankakee Area Metropolitan Enforcement Group, the U.S. Postal Inspector, and the Iroquois County State's Attorney's Office, investigated a report of the possession and distribution of narcotics in the Watseka area. Around 12:50 p.m. Wednesday, members of the Watseka enforcement team and the Iroquois County Sheriff's Department executed the search warrant. The estimated street value of the cannabis found was approximately $8,000, and the street value of the psilocybin mushrooms was approximately $600. Arrested were four Watseka residents, Eric A. Norder, 24, Nicholas S. Norder, 27, James M. Ward, 26, and Mackenzie Fay, 22. Nicholas Norder, Ward, and Fahey were all charged with possession of cannabis with intent to deliver. Eric Norder was charged with possession of cannabis with intent to deliver and possession of controlled substance with intent to deliver. All four were transported to the Iroquois County Jail, where they remained in lieu of bond. The investigation was ongoing, and more arrests are expected. Now from the Paxton City Council. TIF attorney, we still have an assessment problem. Paxton. Unless the Ford County Supervisor of Assessments decides to raise properties' assessed values to better reflect what they are actually worth, the city of Paxton could end up having trouble reimbursing landowners for improvements they have made to their properties in the city's tax increment financing, TIF, district, an attorney warned the city council last month. The city's TIF attorney, Dan Schuring of Springfield, said he and the mayor have been urging Supervisor of Assessments, Patricia Langland, to increase the assessments for the improved properties in the TIF district, but with little success. The city wants property values in the TIF district to increase, in particular because higher values mean more property tax revenue that can be used to reimburse property owners for improving their land. The city already has a number of redevelopment agreements in place, requiring the city to reimburse property owners using tax increment generated through property improvements. However, city officials are becoming worried that they won't be able to fulfill their end of the deal if enough funds are not generated through the TIF district. Just in the past year, Schuring said, about $630,000 in improvements were made to Shields Auto Mart in Paxton. Yet the property's assessed value rose only about $50,000, with the Supervisor of Assessments assigning the property a new fair market value of only about $255,000. Meanwhile, during next Tuesday's meeting, the City Council is preparing to approve a redevelopment agreement with Shields that would require the city to reimburse the auto dealership. Unless the assessments change, Schuring remains concerned that the city will be unable to fulfill its obligations. The property, unfortunately, illustrates that we still have an assessment problem, Schuring told the council last month. The mayor and I have been encouraging the assessor and the county to reassess particularly commercial properties and particularly properties where we can demonstrate a significant improvement. What we can't get this assessor to do is even look at the construction cost numbers that we give them to show how much money was spent to improve a property. We still have a problem. Schuring said that unless things change, the agreement with Shields would not be the only one affected. Schuring noted that aldermen are also expected to approve a redevelopment agreement next Tuesday with the owners of Next Step Commercial Products, who have made a $700,000 improvement to their building on Illinois 9 at the city's west side. Those improvements should increase the building's assessed value by about $200,000, but it remains to be seen whether that actually happens. It is important that we are able to generate the taxes to repay them according to the agreement, Schuring said. But if we don't get the right assessments out of the county, even if they're not on a dollar-for-dollar basis, we're not holding up our end of the bargain, and that will catch up with the city over a period of years. It will catch up over time. So we have to continue to encouraging the county to critically look at these assessments and get the assessments in line with what the real market value of the building is. Alderman Bill Wiley said that when he and other city officials met with the Ford County Board to discuss the situation, he felt as if they didn't have a clue of what we were trying to tell them. Wiley asked Schuring if he got the same impression. Schuring said that yes, he did get that same feeling. Schuring noted that although no one should expect assessments in a rural county like Ford to always reflect a full third of the property's fair market value, it should be expected that assessments should be closer than what they are. When you've got a building that was purchased for $200,000 and you put $600,000 in hard improvements into it, the building on the fair market is worth more than $250,000, Schering said as an example, referring to the Shields Automart property. We're all hamstrung if we can't get the assessments where they belong. Because right now, unless we get the Shields assessment changed, if we agree to reimburse them the $600,000, we won't even make $300,000 in the remaining life of the TIF. Mayor Bill Engel said the assessment problem could end up affecting the Paxton Buckley Lotus schools if not addressed. The city has an agreement with the school district to provide some TIF money for various projects the district would like to pursue. The sooner we can meet certain benchmarks for the TIF district, particularly for the commercial area eyed for development, the quicker we're going to be writing checks from the TIF back to the schools to help them get some things done, Schering said. And they've got a pretty lengthy list. Alderman Rob Steiger asked Schering what else the city could do to address the issue. The city, the taxing bodies, the citizenry have got to keep the pressure up on the county and the county assessors, Schering responded. We've got to get this right. Also, Schering continued, in nearly every redevelopment agreement that we sign, when you approve the cost for a project, I'm going to work with the city clerk and we're going to send a certified copy of those approved costs to the assessor and say, please reassess the building. There's also a form in the assessor's office that a property owner can sign asking for a reassessment of their property, and we're requiring that now, too. I'm not sure what else we can do other than to get into the formal appeal process. That would just get horribly messy and expensive. In addition to the redevelopment agreements with Shields Automart and the Next Step Commercial Products, aldermen were also told to be prepared to approve next week a list of reimbursable expenses for the construction of the Cobblestone Hotel and Suites on Illinois 9. Up to $700,000 in expenses are eligible for reimbursement under a redevelopment agreement the city previously approved. We have not received a tabulation of the expenses yet from the construction manager, but we expect to have that for you to approve, Schering told aldermen in November. Once those expenses are approved, whatever the final amount is, then all Cobblestone will have to do on an annual basis is demonstrate that they've paid their real estate taxes and they'll be eligible for their reimbursement. Also next week, the council is expected to be presented with what Schering referred to as an interim proposal for improvements made to the exterior of Paxton Packing LLC beef jerky plant at the intersection of Taft and State Streets. They have several national companies either here or coming here to see the plant for possible partnership agreements, and they want to get the building whipped into shape, Schering told the council. The council meets 7 p.m. Tuesday at City Hall, 145 South Market Street. The meeting is open to the public. And staying with Paxton and with TIF districts, a new story, Mom and Pop's Kettle Corn Stop to Get New Facade. Paxton. Officials hope that a redevelopment agreement approved by the City Council last month to help finance the renovation of a downtown kettle corn shop can be used as a template for similar projects in the future. Like other redevelopment agreements previously approved for properties located within the city's Tax Increment Financing District, the TIF, the one with Mom and Pop's Kettle Corn Shop calls for the city to reimburse the property owners for improvements made to the property. But unlike others, this redevelopment agreement would make such reimbursements to a local bank, not to the property owners directly. The city's TIF attorney, Dan Schering of Springfield, said that Alan and Marcia Meyer, the owners of the Kettle Corn Shop at 119 South Market Street, have estimated the total project to cost about $82,500, which includes costs associated with the acquisition of the property, as well as about $31,500 in costs to redo the building's facade. Under the redevelopment agreement, the city will reimburse the Myers a total of $23,700 over the remaining life of the TIF district, with the reimbursements being made annually using tax increment generated by the property improvements made. The reimbursements would go directly to a Paxton bank, however, assuming the Myers end up securing a loan from the bank to finance the project. It would be the first time the city makes TIF reimbursements directly to a bank instead of a property owner under its redevelopment agreements. Schering said he hopes other downtown businesses follow suit, helping to give a new look to the business district that is consistent with the downtown streetscape plan completed last year by architects and engineers for the Farnsworth Group in Champaign. "We want to try and use this as a model for the other downtown property owners," Schering said. "We can do this on every building downtown once we get the model worked out. We need to get building owners in the downtown to buy in to the concept and plan renovations that are consistent with the streetscape plan. This is an important project for downtown in two respects. One, it shows the continuity all the way through the entire process, and two, we've now got the participation of a local financial institution which demonstrates their confidence in the downtown." The Myers used the Farnsworth Group to help create conceptual drawings of a new storefront for Mom and Pop's Kettle Corn Shop. The cost to do that was about $3,500, Alan Myers said. The drawings show what the store could look like, both inside and outside, once renovated. The drawings show new lighting, awnings, and signage, among other changes, all consistent with the historic look the city hopes to create through its downtown streetscape plan. "We're looking at window replacement as well, because the windows are old," Alan Meyer said. "They fog up, and they're hot during the day during the summer." Alan Meyer said he plans to get started on the improvements to the building in early 2018. Under the redevelopment agreement, the targeted completion date for the project is April 30, 2018. Mom and Pop's Kettle Corn Shop opened at 119 South Market Street in November 2016. Since then, the business with its popular homemade kettle corn recipes has gained quite the reputation in the area, with most of the business coming from people who do not live in Paxton. "Our sales have really exceeded what we thought," Alan Meyer said. "We ship, we do weddings, we do two or three a month. Downtown is starting to get really busy. It's surprising to me on a Friday or Saturday night how much business a little small-town popcorn shop is bringing to this community. A lot of our clients are coming from Chicago, Champaign, and we get a lot from Hoopston. Downtown is starting to... We want to keep it going. Our hope and dream is that it gets bigger and bigger. We've had people coming into our store wanting our product on their store shelves. And my hope is that at some point, we have stores such as Meyer that would want our product." In election news, just two races lined up for March primary in Ford County, Paxton. There will be two contested races in Ford County on the March 20th primary election ballot. Monday afternoon was the deadline for candidates to file required paperwork at the Ford County Clerk's Office for their name to appear on the ballot. Cassie Schwartz of Roberts and Krisha Shoemaker of Paxton both filed as Republican candidates for the Ford County Treasurer's post, a position held for the last 3 years by Penny Stevens, who is resigning effective December 31st. Because both filed at the same time, a lottery will be held at 9 a.m. Tuesday, December 12th, to determine whose name appears first on the ballot. The only other contest is for the Republican nomination for precinct committeeman for Patton 7, filing at different times were two candidates for that elected office, Judy Hastings and Mike Wilson, both of Paxton. Running unopposed as Republican candidates were Mark Duran for re-election as sheriff and Amy Frederick for re-election as county clerk and recorder. Also unopposed are incumbent Republican County Board candidates Gene May of Paxton, District 1, Chase McCall of Gibson City, District 3. Besides May and McCall, up for re-election on the county board are Dave Hastings, District 1, Joe Clark, District 2, Floyd Bud Otto Jr., District 2, Randy Berger, District 3. No one else filed for re-election. Running unopposed for Republican precinct committeeman seats are McCall in Drummer 4, Stephen Pacey of Paxton in Paxton 1, Thomas N. Bennett of Gibson City in Drummer 5, Robert A. Pacey of Paxton in Patton 2, Tim Nuss of Roberts for Lyman, K. Kim Evans of Paxton in Patton 5, Eric Thompson, Peach Orchard, Theodore W. Conkling in Mona, Robert R. Reed in Pella, Dennis Fisher of Gibson City, Drummer 1, Adam Elder of Gibson City, Drummer 3, and Alan Barnes of Paxton, Patton 4. Edwin Homeyer also filed for re-election as Democratic Precinct Committeeman for Rogers Township. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Record for Thursday, December 7, 2017. Robert A. Bergman, Rantoul. Robert A. Bergman, 70, of Rantoul, brother of a Paxton resident, died on the morning of Monday, December 4, 2017, at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton. Funeral services were held at 10 a.m. Friday, December 8, at the American Lutheran Church in Rantoul, with the Reverend Matt Bonfeth officiating. Burial followed in Beckman Cemetery, Thomasboro. Memorials may be made to Carl Hospice or the American Lutheran Church. David L. Hagland, Elliott. David L. Hagland, 70, of Elliott, died at 11:06 p.m., Sunday, December 3, 2017, at Heritage Health in Gibson City, with his wife and daughters by his side. His funeral was held at 11 a.m. Friday, December 8, at the Lamb Funeral Home in Gibson City. Burial followed at the Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts may be made to Heritage Health. Frankie Carl Heinzman, Universal City, Texas. Frankie Carl Heinzman, 68, of Universal City, Texas, died Wednesday, November 29, 2017. Funeral services were held at the Holy Trinity Presbyterian Church on Tuesday, December 5th, with the Reverend Dr. Richard Kreitzer officiating. Interment was in the Holy Cross Cemetery. In honor of Mr. Heinzman's memory, donations may be made to the Shriners Hospital for Children or to an organization of the donor's choice. Arnold K. Heinrich, and that's spelt H-I-N-R-I-C-H-S, Royal. Arnold K. Heinrich, 90, of Royal, died at 2:09 a.m., Monday, December 4, 2017, at Country Health Nursing Home in Gifford. Funeral services were held Thursday, December 7th, at the Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Flatville, with the Reverend James T. Lehman officiating. Burial followed in Cotman Cemetery in Royal. Memorials may be made to the Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Flatville, the American Cancer Society, or the American Breast Cancer Foundation. Thomas H. Keeley, Sr., Fairbury. Thomas H. Keeley, Sr., 85, of Fairbury, father of a Gibson City resident, died at 1:55 p.m., Sunday, December 3, 2017, at Fairview Haven Retirement Community in Fairbury. Cremation rites were accorded, and a graveside inhumation with military honors will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, December 9th, at Strawn Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial contributions be directed to St. Jude's Children Research Hospital. Epifano Santibanez Martinez, Gibson City. Epifano Santibanez Martinez, 50, of Gibson City, died Sunday, December 3, 2017, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services were Wednesday, December 6, at the Lamb Funeral Home in Gibson City, with the Reverend David Santana officiating. Burial followed in the Drummond Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorials may be made to the family. Returning to the news, our next story is entitled, Buckley Board Sets Deadline for Cleanup of First Street Property. Buckley. After a lengthy discussion Monday night, village trustees voted to give Ray Detterming owner of a property in South First Street in Buckley, until Thursday to have Miller's septic system empty a septic tank on his property and have a plumber find the leak on the property and to give him a week from Thursday to fix the problem entirely. If the work is not done, the village plans to proceed with legal action against the property. The property has been an issue for some time, as there has been raw sewage on the ground. The property's tenant asked the board what was being done about a tile outlet problem there. The tenant said she would like to buy the property, but cannot do so until the problem is fixed. Preceding Monday's decision was a special meeting held November 30th at the First Street site. Present were village trustees Peggy Shockley, Tim Whitebird, and Keith Hartke, along with village attorney George Conzo of Watsika, Terry Iman, Director of Environmental Health for the Illinois County Public Health Department, Donnie Miller, the village's maintenance worker, Evan Shockley, a Buckley resident and former village board president, and Jim Bach. Bach had said previously that the village needed to work on the outlet problem. Bach said a certain drain might be possibility for solving the problematic system, which he said was installed in 1995 by Merle Roy. Bach said the water lines weren't put in deep enough. Upon walking up the backyard, raw sewage on the ground was visible. Quanzo questioned what was draining into the tile, and Iman said it could be groundwater because of the 10-foot separation from the tank. Iman said the curtain drain wasn't working because we can see sewage on the ground, and it's not old, it's new. The curtain drain is helping but not eliminating the problem. Bach said the sewage will dry up and that there used to be a pond on the property. Quanzo told Bach that the tank needed to be pumped, to which Bach replied, it doesn't. Iman then said, yes it does. This will run into the neighbor's property and this is an illegal discharge. Iman said there are ground tests and other tests that need to be taken and that the village needs to check with the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. Quanzo said it should be Detmering's responsibility to get all that done since he owns the property. Bach said Detmering was willing to do that. But, Quanzo said, he hasn't done anything yet. Bach then yelled, that's because the village tile is plugged up. I can show you right now. But Iman said the problem doesn't have anything to do with the village's drainage tile. Bach then walked up to the front of the property and moved the old plywood off the hole he had dug to show the village's tile. Bach said it needed to be drilled out. What runs in this pipe, sewage? Iman asked. Bach then said, I run sewer water for 16 years in this town. We need to get the home's crawl space cleaned out. Peggy Shockley then asked Bach, who's going to pay for this hole you dug? I don't give a crap if you ever pay me, Bach said. I just wanted to prove a point. Peggy Shockley said her concern was that Bach never asked the board for permission to dig the hole on city property. No, and I ain't going to, Bach responded. I filled out the stupid permit and I work in 18 different villages and this is the only place I need a permit. Peggy Shockley then told Bach, you're not in many different villages, you're in Buckley and we have rules. After that, Bach covered back up the holes and stormed off. Bach had been warned before about digging on village property without permission, and that prompted the board to implement the permit process. Official agreed that the village cannot allow Bach or anyone else to dig wherever they want without permission. Quanzo and Iman both said the hole needed to be filled in, as it is a safety issue, but Quanzo said that if the sit tile needs to be unblocked, then the village should unblock it. At this time, it has been unblocked. Shockley asked Miller if he had been digging on the south corner of the property that morning, and Miller said that he had not, that it was Bach. Quanzo said he called Detmering the day after the meeting and spoke with him. Quanzo said he told them he needed to have the tank pumped, which Detmering agreed to do. As of Monday, the tank had not been pumped. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the Ford County Record. Just a reminder that this and all our weekly paper readings can be found on our website, www.will.illinois.edu/radio reader, or by Googling Illinois Radio Reader. We are also available on the Cero, S-E-R-O, app for your smartphone. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.